Kia ora Etse whānau. You are tuned into another Audio and Teaching. And on today's show, I have the incredible Andrew Schmidt talking about his audio culture article about Bill Doreen. So, Andrew, how are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Bex.
Yeah, wicked stuff. Now, with your article, why did you write it?
Bill was somebody I met quite early on as a young fan, and he was incredibly open and accessible. He would talk to you, and he wouldn't talk down to you, which was strange because by that stage we'd heard his early records and thought they were brilliant, and both lyrically and musically. So I followed his career over the years, and every once in a while he would pop up in town for a live show and we would fall into conversation. So we became friends, I guess, in a way.
Oh, that's really special. And so, in a way, is this article kind of honouring him?
Yeah, well, you always have more questions. And Bill was a sort of guy who creatively sort of lives in the now. So he's always working on a new project. He's engrossed in that. So, and because he's produced so much music and writing over the years, there still remain quite large chunks of his past endeavours that weren't explained. There were still plenty of questions to ask. So particularly of those early years where he was putting out a lot of music in a very short period of time, and there wasn't a receptive media out there to do the job.
Right. And so what was some of the earlier projects and stuff that he was a part of?
Well, he was very much one of the early independent musicians in New Zealand, independent in the sense that he didn't need a mainstream record company to okay his music or get it out there. He would record it and get it pressed himself, and he would then advertise it and rip it up. There was a little, what they used to call the classifieds, where you would put just general information, and he would, every once in a while, and rip it up, it would pop up, there was a new record by Bill Doreen, usually under a different name each time, but we knew it was Bill, and you would send away some money, and then he would send a record back to you. So, you know, he was very industrious and well-organized, as well as being independent.
Wow. And, you know, being quite industrious and stuff, that's quite a juxtaposition to how it works now, because I guess for a majority of listeners, they kind of just go on streaming services or like Bandcamp to now get it. What do you think what made, you know, Bill having such a hands-on approach so special?
Well, you know, there was always that personal connection. You were writing a letter to him and he was replying to you. So, there wasn't any distance between the artist and the fans in those days. And Bill, I don't think, was ever in favour of that anyway. So that made it quite special. The music was stunning as well. So it wasn't as though we were doing it for charity reasons or anything like that. We wanted those records. And when we got those records, they were played a lot.
And, you know, when you're thinking about Bill and when you're writing this article, what was your favourite part or the most enjoyable part, I think, for you of your piece?
Okay, well, the article was actually a two-parter. The first part originally appeared in a punk rock and post-punk music history magazine I did called Mr. X. And that one was pretty special because I actually, for the first time, I got to ask Bill a lot of questions about his records. And he'd never talked about that before. So we got a lot of quite unique information there. Bill thinks like an artist. He thinks in a more of a roundabout way than a historian does, which is a sort of a day-by-day sort of way. So it was fun hearing it and then placing it into some sort of historical context. And it wasn't just the music. He was doing small run booklets, small run publishing. And as a writer, that interested me as well, and we would send away for those as well. They would have his lyrics sometimes, poetry, the beginnings of short stories.
Wow.
And Bill being a fantastic collaborator, and this is one thing that goes right through his career, he recognises talent and he encourages talent, and it doesn't have to be well-known talent for him to draft it. In fact, I think he prefers people who are on the up rather than people who have sort of made it, so that all these other characters were involved that we could then sort of become interested in, whether it was musicians or artists or people involved in his theatre endeavours.
Ooh, theatre endeavours. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Well, that was a major part of his early years, and it's probably still a big part of his life. But in Christchurch, he had a theatre company put together called the Blue Ladder Theatre Company. And he was putting on French plays and self-written plays. He was drafting in. A lot of this was in collaboration with his partner then, Carol Woodward, who was a lecturer at University of Canterbury. But there were a lot of other talented people in Christchurch that Bill was getting on board. And with theatre, you could have musicians, you could have actors, you could have people doing the sets, so artists and creative people. These were major endeavours and done on a shoestring. But if you look back through the old Christchurch presses and stars, there they are. He's advertising them. People are going to see them. Sometimes they have to shift venues for the productions because these are budget productions, and you perform them where you can. You find the spaces where you can, and that had a wonderful spontaneous element to it.
Wow. Now that is quite special, hey, because I guess especially, yeah, here in Christchurch, we do have a few couple theatre companies, but it seems to be the main one is like, the court theatre and like the youth court theatre and stuff like that, hey.
Yeah, and that was probably still going at that point. And that this was just a, I mean, Christchurch has a wonderful creative history, so I'm
Totally.
not surprised there are different layers and different tiers of activities in the city. But yeah, it certainly added depth and probably provided a lot of people with an opportunity to maybe go to the court theatre and be a part of that if they wanted to, or go on and do other things.
Totally. And I think it's really beautiful because, within the arts, especially, within music and theatre, they do intersect quite a lot, don't
Yes,
they?
one of the early records that Bill put out was a collection of his recordings from some of his theatre productions, and it was called Soluble Fish. That was another one of his our theatre company, Soluble Fish,
Oh,
and that was a
wow.
brilliant record. There's a song on that called Papa Curl, which is a song about child abuse.
Oh,
So it's
wow.
harrowing and it's horrific, but in some ways it's also incredibly brave and musically quite enduring sort of song. It's never been reissued, which I'm a bit surprised by.
Interesting.
He would go on throughout his career to release his theatre music at various points when he could.
Wow. And are there any final notes or things that you would like to share, just about Bill or just about the two-part article you've written?
Look, there's probably a third part there. He's just produced two really brilliant albums. I think his fame and relative to the other Fly Nun groups or Fry Nun related groups came quite late, and it came through the reissue of his first two albums in the last decade, second half of the last decade. So he I think he's gathered a reputation in the States from that. And the last two records, he's collaborating with a couple of guys from Nashville who are in a band called Lamb Chop, and those records are particularly well realized. So, he's still going, and he's still a vital part of our music scene. He's living partly in Paris, but he's also back in inland Otago. He's all over the place, really, but he'll always be doing something, and it will always be interesting.
Amen to that. That just shows he's a true creative then, doesn't it? True to his craft.
He's a complete artist. He's dedicated his life to it. So getting this Arts Laureate, I mean, he's earned that many, many times over. I'm surprised they've even heard of him, to be honest, but I am so tickled with him because I know he'll put that money to good use, whether it's just in his own personal life or whether he channels it into his art. Bill is, he's always going to be doing something, and he'll do something with that.
Oh, what beautiful final words there, Andrew. That was a very good summary. RDU 98.5, that has been an interview with Andrew Schmidt talking about his Audio Culture article about Bill Doreen. It is a two-parter, so feel free to go onto the Audio Culture website and you can see it through there. Also, this will be podcasted as our audio antiquing, so you can always follow it through there. But nga mihi team, and we'll see you next time.